All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is Nikhil Mercade with Department of Conservation Natural Resources OHV program. We'll be hosting a workshop to amend the Nevada Administrative Code number 490 today. And this is the first of at least two workshops that will take place. All of our supporting materials are provided at ohv.nb.gov/meeting, where you can access our proposed changes, an agenda, a notice of the workshop to solicit comments, and a small business impact statement. I guess we'll call this workshop to order. Before doing that, can we confirm that Craig Burkett, are you on the line? No, Chris.
Not. Okay.
And what about Dominic Echegoyen? Are you on the line?
Yes, Dominic is on the line.
Okay. Hi, Dominic. All right. So on our agenda today, I guess item number two. Let's see. Instead of going through each item, maybe while we're soliciting public comment, please just state your name of who's speaking and then the NAC that you'd like to discuss.
And anybody can start.
Hello, this is Paul Quaid from SORA.
Paul?
Good afternoon, folks. So we submitted to Nikhil and Dominique our written comments related to the proposed changes of the draft. I wasn't going to go through each one of the suggestions that we made. We just ask that the written comments we provided be made part of the record, and we'd be happy to answer any questions regarding our position in that regard, and would supplement those as you folks discuss them further.
Okay. Did we post those, or do we need to post them?
So, yeah, Paul, I've removed those from the current supporting documents online, and after this meeting, I'll enter them in as a public comment. That was interesting.
Perfect.
Okay.
That sounds good. Like I said, if there's any questions, and we'll be happy to supplement any other comments that are made as we proceed.
Okay. Did you want to discuss with anybody else that's on the line any of these definitions? I know that we talked about defining the facility as well as the director. Any of the language that you want to discuss specifically?
We obviously in our written comments provided a proposed language for the director and program that references the statutes creating those positions. Related to facility, I noted that there is no definition of facility within the NRS or NAC, and I didn't even begin to try to encompass what a facility might mean in context of the OHV Commission and OHV grants. Obviously, we're talking about any type of trailhead facilities and the like. But I was going to leave that to the experts at DCNR as far as what we might want to include within facility.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Got it. Hi, Nikhil.
Yes.
This is Sean McDonald with the DMV. Sorry, we dialed in a minute ago and we got kicked out, so I just called back in. I wanted to just quickly touch base on a couple of items that were underneath the registration heading. So Again, we're in total support of what you're trying to accomplish. I think ultimately we're looking at putting together a portal, and I know we had discussed that in the past. But I think it's important to mention that our biggest concern right now is this is kind of an unfunded mandate. There's no revenue to generate, to put forth to program this item. So there's a lot of financially speaking, there's going to be some burden on the department to create this ability to be able to capture this information on a first-time registration and have that submitted. The only other piece, too, that we wanted to bring forward was that, again, understand the idea of taking a picture of a VIN and including that with the application paperwork when somebody wants to do a first-time registration on an OHV. But I think it's important to note that there is a fraud concern with that because there's no real way to know that that picture is truly representative of the vehicle that is being registered. So we wanted to make sure we got that on record. And again, I think we need to have some further discussions regarding how to kind of polish up the language just so that way it meets your intent and meets the commission's intent, but also it's something that the Department of Motor Vehicles can bring forward to accomplish those goals. And finally, one other piece regarding NAC 490.410. This is a piece where we're removing the word registration and adding title with regards to taxes. You may want to consider having both of those in there, both registration and title, just to make sure the point of taxation is captured. With Nevada not being a titling state, should a exchange happen, we don't always require a title because in Nevada that's just not a requirement of us. So, so it's just something to consider.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Sean. So to reiterate, sounds like there were three specific points there. We need to look for financing if we're going to request, like, an electronic submission portal. We need to figure out a way to pay for building that portal. The second item was submitting VIN inspections with photo evidence or like an affidavit swearing that that's your machine. That raises a fraud concern for the DMV as well as like law enforcement, I'm assuming, because it becomes hard to track. And then the last concern was making sure that machines that are in Nevada have all of their taxes paid up to them for registration. And so I'll make a comment on that last piece there. We do want to capture the tax revenue for when you go to title your machine, and that's kind of up to the user whether they want to obtain a title for it. For registration, the reason that we removed registration and inserted title was the intent is to make registration as easy as possible to obtain. We don't want to tie the registration so much to go hand-in-hand with the title. It should supplement the title. So short explanation, but yeah, Sean, let's plan to discuss offline further how to change this language just after gathering today's public's comments.
No, that's perfect, and I really appreciate it, Nikhil. And one other piece, just to tie back to the financial aspect of doing the programmatic changes. Again, with the department, obviously our resources are extremely limited, and especially now given our new environment, obviously we've got some very strong competing projects and whatnot. So prioritizing this is also going to be something that we'll need to discuss further. So again, I mean, obviously we're more than willing to sit down and try to work out the best solution for everybody. And I think where you're heading is definitely the right idea. I think there's definitely some good things that can come out of that. It's just by putting it in the regs and passing the regulations doesn't make that an automatic fix on our side. It's going to take time, and prioritizing that work with our IT staff is going to be a challenge. So, but again, I really appreciate the opportunity to have the discussion, and again, I think you're heading in the right direction.
Okay, thank you, Sean.
Sean, this is Greg McKay. How are you?
I'm good, Greg. How are you doing?
Thanks. Good to hear from you. Do you have any idea of what that fix or the amount of money it would take to do the e-portal?
I don't as of yet, and I've actually been in discussions today with my counterpart over our IT side. And in fact, it might be good to actually have you included in those conversations too, if you'd be available, and the same with the commission, just to get an overview of how exhaustive you want that portal to be. So that way we can know exactly what kind of a number we would be able to throw at it and what kind of time frames we would be looking at. I mean, obviously, if there's ways to do any kind of even a temporary workaround or something, that would be something that we'd want to address as well to try to make this go a little bit quicker for you. I just, again, wanted just to let everybody know that, you know, obviously passing the language is a good first step, but the steps that follow just take time, unfortunately. It's just one of those
things. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Commissioner Baker. I have a question for Sean as well.
Go ahead, Sue.
Sean, the idea of the potential for fraud with somebody sending in somebody else's VIN or modifying it, I have a question because for my four-wheelers, when I went to insure them, my insurance agent, when I gave him the VIN number, he didn't even need me to tell him make, model, year. He knew it by the program that he had. And I'm wondering if you guys have that with the car, would you be able to get the same thing for the UTVs and ATVs, and would that help alleviate some of your concerns?
Yeah, no, that's actually a very good point. And you're right. We do have that software in-house so that we're able to type in a VIN and get an immediate pushback of what kind of vehicle it is, you know, the type of engine it has, you know, anything that can be decoded in a VIN, we can figure that out pretty quickly. But the biggest challenge that we would be facing would be that somebody was to take a picture of a vehicle, take a picture of a particular VIN, and submit it as being ownership of their own because they signed an attestation. Whereas when you're doing a VIN inspection, and I know the VIN inspections have been a challenge, don't get me wrong, but where a VIN inspection is occurring, you have somebody physically looking at that vehicle and physically examining the VIN. And when you're getting insurance, it's a little bit different, right, than versus actually taking ownership for a title or something when you're trying to go through that process. So that was just one thing we wanted to kind of get on the record just to make sure that, if you go forward with this, we're not opposed to it, but we just wanted it to be known that we had a few concerns.
I guess I'm just wondering if we could skip the process where they needed to take a picture of the VIN if the program was created so that they entered the make and model number and then typed in the VIN, and if the two didn't align, it would already self-eject it from the process. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And then we wouldn't have to worry about them. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly talk about it a little bit more. It was just a case of physically having somebody witness and attest to that vehicle being what it is versus an owner. One of the reasons I think that DMV was involved from step one on the OHV program was we had the ability to validate ownership, and we, you know, through existing practices that we have on the automotive side. So this just kind of detours from that a little bit. And so, again, I know that you, obviously for all of your folks, you want to try to make it as easy as possible and try to make the process, you know, obviously it can be difficult, I get it. So it just depends on how in-depth you as the commission want to go on that and whatnot, but it's just, we just wanted to bring it forward.
Okay, and I just think from my perspective, the ease of a program that could self-validate if you type in your VIN and you type in your make and model and they match, we would be grabbing so many more renewals and new registrations versus the few, very, very few that we may catch with the process we have now with the VIN verification through law enforcement that I myself am not concerned because there'd be so many more registrations I think we could get if we ease the process. So that's just my take.
Nope, I completely understand, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with your position on it. I really wouldn't. You know, it's just, and you're right, it's a balancing act, right? So you might have, you run the risk of you know, the bad actors doing bad things, but at the same time, too, you will definitely see an increase in overall, in theory, in overall registrations, because it's just one more step that makes things a little bit easier.
This is Commissioner Fell. I have a couple comments, I guess, to add to that. I think what we're trying to do is, you know, and it was alluded to earlier, is separate the registration from the titling. So by, you know, maybe making the VIN inspection process a little bit easier on the registration just so you're legal to go out and ride, that's separate from the actual ownership. And the way it is currently now, when I get my VIN inspection and I send my paperwork into the mail and I get my sticker back, to me it's the same risk of fraud, especially having multiple bikes, that I'm going to take that sticker in the mail and put it on the correct bike. You know, I could easily put it on any of the bikes that I have, and then a month later say, I need a duplicate, I lost my sticker, I need a duplicate sticker, get my duplicate sticker, and now I have stickers for two bikes. So I think the risk of fraud is the same as far as just getting a sticker to use the trails in the current system versus taking a picture of the VIN inspection anyways. I don't think it increases any.
Commissioner Parks, let me try to clarify that a little bit. It titling, we shouldn't change that. We should title the bike the way it's being done now, have a legit VIN inspection by law enforcement and title the bike. And I think what Commissioner Fell was trying to say is that the actual use or use sticker to go out and ride should be separate from the titling process. And we should try to not have to re-register every year we should only have to redo that when we sell the bike or the quad or whatever. So I'd like to see a registration last an amount of time. The average person keeps a motorcycle or something like that, like we can do with trailers, like a 4-year registration or something like that. And then you buy your use sticker each year. And I think that's how other states have been doing it. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how California does it. The titling is totally separate from the use.
Yeah, this is Sean, and definitely I would agree with what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I see no reason to streamline the titling if we can separate that from the use sticker. It's to have to redo that every year that it gets a little more complicated. Plus, a lot of people might have a bike that is. I'd like to see them all titled, but there's a million of them out there that aren't. And that's where the fraud would come in, like Commissioner Fell said. If I have one that I can't get titled for whatever reason, but I want to go ride it, and then I call in and say I lost my sticker, that's where you're going to see that. But the biggest loss of revenue is not through fraud. It's the fact that if I have a bike I can't register in Nevada, I can go buy a California sticker and ride all over Nevada and just give my money to California. And that's something we want to try to get away from.
Yeah, this is Sean again from the DMV, and I agree. And you're right. to both of your points, it's a case that it wouldn't be much different than even going out to the parking lot and grabbing somebody's license plates and throwing them on your car. It really comes down to law enforcement capturing it at some point, realizing that identifying registration piece does not necessarily tie. And I know we don't, with the decals, they don't tie, but there's still,
obviously the titling piece and the registration piece do need to kind of be left separate for that reason.
This is Commissioner Malone. So currently there is no possible way for us to run a OHV registration sticker. A couple weeks ago we had a pretty bad OHV accident, and when we ran the VIN, we got a hit off of it due to the title. But the actual registration sticker isn't noted anywhere, even on titled OHV vehicles.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That is true. There is no tie. There isn't. I was just kind of giving an example, but you're absolutely correct. There's, you know, the obviously when you the title piece where you enter the VIN and where law enforcement is pulling it, is that it's coming from that title side. It's not coming from the registration side per se.
So is there a way to run a sticker? Like if we come across an abandoned OHV out in the desert, which we do all the time, is there a way to run an actual sticker with you guys?
Unfortunately, right now, as it stands, no, there isn't. Just because, again, the VIN element of that is really tied at the titling side of things. It's not really tied to the registration, I'd say. Yeah, where a plate, on a car, that, of course, has a tie. But, yeah, unfortunately, with the OHV side of things, there really isn't.
So, I mean, honestly, if somebody was really good at forging documents, I mean, you could just design a sticker and order it online or print it from your home computer. As long as it looks similar to, my buddy's, OHV decal, I'm good to go.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And I'll tell you, I see it happen actually with plates, too. I mean, it's not uncommon for somebody to try to do something like that with plates. You know, the flat plates that we had once upon a time, people would find ways to do the same. So if somebody really wants to do something, they oftentimes find ways.
This is Commissioner Baker. I'm just shocked right now because there was never any connection between the VIN and the sticker we give them. How in the world did we ever get that process started?
This is Sean again. I know that I'm looking to my folks who are with me. I know you do have the registration certificate that somebody could carry with them theoretically while they're riding the OHV. Yeah, they're supposed to carry that with them. So obviously if somebody could, was to pull over somebody with an OHV and they could verify that registration document with the sticker to, confirm, but...
Well, law enforcement works off of probable cause, and if somebody has a decal that looks like any other decal, I don't have probable cause to stop them.
Right.
So after the last three comments, one from Commissioner Fell, one from Commissioner Parks, and a couple from Commissioner Malone, Is there any way, or question, is there any way to tie this VIN inspection or a VIN affidavit, the whole VIN package, just to obtain a title and we take it away from registration? Is that possible through our NACs? Is that something we should pursue? And then for Commissioner Parks' comment about a use sticker, right now we're kind of using the term registration and use sticker interchangeably. And that's been brought up in another written comment from Sora that they'd like to see, a way to provide an OHV type sticker to a street licensed vehicle like a Jeep, for example. So I guess I'm looking for some kind of consensus. Should we try and move VIN inspections over to title only and remove them? Registrations? How's that work?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Fell. I love that idea. I'm kind of with Sue. I'm kind of completely baffled on why we have to have all these VIN checks and all these hard requirements to get a registration that doesn't even tie the VIN to the registration. That's baffling to me. Like, it should only be used for title then.
And this is Paul Quaid on behalf of SORA. In looking at the NRS, it's because the titling and registration are tied together. In my view, and Dominic may be able to correct me if I'm wrong on this, it would require legislative action to disengage the two. And honestly, in looking through the process and knowing how it's applied, I see no benefit to registration at this point, given there's no tie, actual practical tie. That's why we're going to be advocating and pushing for a use sticker as opposed to registration.
This is Dominic. Understood. I hear that, Paul. And I appreciate everyone's discussion on this. These are things we're going to take into consideration when we're looking at what changes we can make in the NAC and should make in the NAC versus what we might want to propose through the legislative process for the NRS. You know, I was not here when this program was created with this registration and titling process. I do recall always hearing from others that there were concerns by the dealers about individuals purchasing their OHVs out of state and not paying taxes, et cetera. And I think it might have been the dealers that really liked these two processes tied together to ensure that when you're registering your vehicle and getting a sticker that it's titled, and they felt that that would promote more in-state purchase of OHVs. Now, I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but that is one thing I've heard from others.
Does anybody know what the dealer enjoys financially as far as titling versus registration?
This is Sean for the DMV. Can you expand on that? I apologize.
No problem. Well, actually, it's kind of a two-part question. What is let me ask the first one. Is there a financial advantage except for the sale for the dealer to title and or register the vehicle upon sale? And then the second one is, what is DMV's position if we were to remove the registration process and just go to a used decal that was sold by a third party or available online and take DMV out of that process altogether?
Yeah, this is Sean. So I'm kind of going backwards order here. So to answer the second part of your question, that would be fine to do it as a regular use sticker, and I definitely think you would probably experience a significant increase in overall registrations. It would make it as easy as buying candy bars, we always kind of joke around about. Obviously, we could continue keeping the title piece in-house. We continue running that. But, and again, this is something that's got to work for, the commission and work for all of, the OHV folks in general. So, but that would definitely be a possibility. So, obviously we as a department would not be, we wouldn't be against it or for it for that matter. It's whatever works best for the OHV community. And on the other part of that, the dealers were ultimately just another resource. So that way when they sold a vehicle, they could handle the registration and titling immediately upon sale. And paying the taxes, of course. Honestly, I think that if you had easier avenues to do just a use permit, make it like getting a fishing license or something along those lines, you would probably see a significant increase in the overall number of registrations.
Thank you.
Any other comments out there on any topic?
Commissioner Parks, I also heard him mention other off-road vehicles, and I guess he's referring to, like, if I have a Jeep and I want to go on a dirt road, now I also have to get an OHV sticker. I I half agree with that. I'm not 100% sure I agree with it with an actual registered vehicle. But one avenue that at least we see in Douglas County a lot is mountain bikes. And I have a hard time with bikes in general because they get so much for nothing. Bikes don't get registered. They don't pay use fees. And they use everything, including the roadways and off-road. So that's a direction I definitely would like to see, that, you know, a mountain bike, motorized or not, if it's going to use the trails, maybe they ought to pitch in to help.
I don't think they were suggesting making it mandatory. It'd be a voluntary type program.
This is Paul Quaid from SORA. What we'd like to see in the long run, as OHV designated routes are laid out and we have a map plan in coordination with our federal land managers, that if there would be a requirement if you're on an OHV route as opposed to State Route 34 up in northern Washoe County, that's obviously a county managed dirt road or state managed, that where the on-road registration would qualify. But if you're utilizing your Jeep, and there are Jeepers that take off their license plate so they don't get them ripped off to go on rock crawling or whatever, that would require an OHV sticker. To speak to your issue with the mountain bikers, Commissioner Parks, that is part of our concept also as we start to share the trails more with other users, that we do look at that and coordinate that with the Office of Outdoor Recreation to look at these use permits and for grant purposes of trail maintenance facilities and the like that all users are taking advantage of. But that's further down the road, just subject to some conversation at this point.
Commissioner Parks, okay. I totally agree with that. I guess I wasn't clear. I mean, if you have a Jeep that's not registered or not street, you know, legal, and it's trailered out to, I absolutely think they should buy a sticker. I'm just going back and forth. I guess I'm going to need more convincing that if I have a registered vehicle, now I have to buy the sticker as well. And I guess it's not that big a deal, but I'm open to that. Just not 100% there yet.
And that would take a legislative change, because registered vehicles pursuant to 482 are specifically excluded from off-road vehicles. So that would take a legislative change and a lot more work moving forward, and some consensus there.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
I think I'm
on board 99% with everything so far.
This is Commissioner Fell. Just to speak, Brian, to your point, what comes to mind for me is like an area like Prison Hill. I know on the commission we've put a lot of money towards that project, and a big area of that project is for rock crawling and for Jeep people to use. So I would be in favor of like a use sticker for, even if it's vehicle is street legal, to use that kind of off-road playground that's, you know, funded through a lot of the OHV commission funds. So I think that's kind of the direction Paul's trying to go with it. But, you know, I agree with you too. If you're just cruising through the pine nuts on a, you know, standard BLM road, that's a little bit different. Your license plate, in my opinion, should get you down that road no problem.
Okay, yeah, I see where you guys are going, and that's why I was 99%, because I agree and then I disagree, and I see your point totally. So that's definitely something for discussion, because I can see both points. So, yeah.
This is Commissioner Cox.
Go ahead, Charlie.
You know, the registered vehicle Jeeps, you know, they're part of the state gas tax is RTP money, and that money goes to these trails that they use. And I wonder if that's been lost sight of here. you know, if they take their license plate off when they're rock crawling just so it won't get torn off, that still the motorized community can apply for RTP funds to maintain these trails and do everything. So I think asking them to buy an off-highway sticker is, you know, like double taxation almost.
Well, a dirt bike still uses gas, and a side-by-side still uses gas.
Everything uses gas.
It does now.
But good point, Charlie.
I know. Yeah. Well, but the point is that besides the gas, besides the RTP money, they are also paying in their registration that the dirt bike and the mountain bike don't pay the sort of license plates, you know. I mean, some dirt bikes can get a license, they do a purpose, obviously, but I don't know. I'm all for making as much money as we can, but I think if a Jeeper wants to voluntarily buy an off-road sticker, that's great, but to mandate it, I think that'd be tough.
This is Paul Quaid from SORA. One of our constituents from Nevada Four Wheel Drive Association has been advocating, and I've heard this from other registered four-wheel drive groups, that they would like a seat at the table on the OHV commission. And there's a pushback from that suggestion because they are exempted from the OHV requirement and therefore have representation elsewhere, but they're one of the largest parts of our constituency that utilize these routes. And so I think this goes hand in hand with looking at potentially giving them a seat at the table and making that a requirement and getting their participation. Because a lot of these folks not only have their registered Jeeps, but also their side-by-sides and the like. And I think if you get that participation and ownership, you can increase revenue and participation in the OHV grant process. And that's certainly one of our goals with SORA, is to get these end user groups like Hells Angels, Nevada Four Wheel Drive Association, and some of these other groups to ask for OHV funds to maintain some of their favorite play areas. And we'd like to see that hand in hand with the non-licensed vehicles and some coordination between the user groups. So that's kind of the bigger scheme that we're looking at on those fronts.
Okay. Anyone have any other comments on NAC changes?
Commissioner Parks, now I'm in 100%. I agree. If they were looking for a seat at the table and the price of these stickers was somewhere around $15 a year, I can't see anybody complaining at that point. And then do we want to bring up reciprocity? Is now a time for that as far as doing
sure.
away with reciprocity?
Go ahead.
So, again, I think if we can get to the point where we have a use sticker that's as easy as buying it over the counter, which I can do right now for the state of California. If I want to go to California, I can go buy one right over the counter and ride a bike in California. And I did that for many years prior to our stickers. When we got our stickers and we got reciprocity, obviously I didn't have to do that. But I am a firm believer that if you go out into these hills any day of the week, you're going to see probably 3-1. California bikes versus Nevada bikes in certain areas, of course. And I think we're missing a huge revenue there. If we don't have reciprocity with other states like we used to anymore, I think it's time to do away with the California reciprocity.
Well, if you do it, you do it with everybody.
Well, it sounds like everybody else has already done it. It sounds like the only state we have left that we have reciprocity with is California. So,
yeah, I think
it would be.
But, yeah, it seems to be going that way. Does anyone have a problem with eliminating risk?
This is Commissioner Malone.
Okay.
So a couple of points. I like the user sticker a lot more than a registration. it removes a lot of the confusion, you know. And you know, if we're going to if we're going to get rid of reciprocity and just mandate everybody has to have a Nevada user fee or a user permit, I mean, it's black and white. Either you have it or you don't. Either you get a citation or you don't. I mean, from a law enforcement perspective, I can support that a lot better.
Okay. Paul, what do you think about the reciprocity issue?
I believe it should be eliminated. If you're going to use our public lands, you buy a Nevada use sticker.
Paul, do you think we can move towards a use sticker or annual registration through this NAC change, or will that require changes?
I believe it would require legislative changes. That's part of the language we're working on, and hopefully we'll have that over to the experts within DCNR, at least suggestions, and get somebody to hopefully back that push.
Okay. So, yeah, that's in NRS 490.082. And we discussed it briefly at this morning's commission meeting, but we're throwing around the term reciprocity where we're kind of assuming that a Utah sticker no longer works here in Nevada just because they removed reciprocity from their statutes. And that's a little inaccurate. Right now, it's if the machine is in the state and registered out of state anywhere, and it's here in Nevada for less than 15 days, then they're still within their rights to be riding out here. So even though others are retracting their reciprocity with Nevada, our statute's written such that that reciprocity stays. So somebody from Utah can come here and ride free and clear, as it says.
This is Paul Quaid. From a practical standpoint, we believe that should be eliminated also. And basically, if you're using our public lands and come to our state, you need to buy the use sticker for whatever length of time. There can be discussions on year-long or multiple-year use stickers. There's a lot of nuances that we can apply there. But if we're talking about a $20, $25 purchase and somebody's traveling to the state of Nevada, it's a relatively minor investment when we're looking at it, but cumulatively could obviously contribute a lot to maintenance, signage, GIS efforts and the like. So we'd like to make it as simple as possible for everyone and apply it equally would be our suggestion.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Paul. Was there any NAC that we could amend to, like, help us get to that point, any NAC or any number tied to it?
Dominic may be able to speak to this a little bit better. I don't see it without an NRS change.
Okay, that's right. Okay, I'm on the same page.
This is Dominic. Yeah, I think that is something that will need to be considered as an NRS change versus being able to make those changes within the NEC.
Okay.
Does anybody have comments on the draft language that was presented, anything, any specific NAC numbers that where issues arose from, you know, what we're proposing to change?
This is Paul Quaid from SORA, and just generally, and then I'll get to a specific NAC. I noticed the elimination of NAC 490-1393 and eliminating specific factors and criteria used to evaluate and score the application. I happen to be a party to some of the problems that occurred during the initial grant process where it was unclear what the criteria were and how the scoring sheets were being utilized. And so one of my concerns and one of the things that I would definitely want to highlight related to this is, and I know there's discussion of revisions related to the scoring sheet. I think that that is a definite necessity. I think the priorities need to be discussed. But I also view the scoring sheet as being an absolute necessity as far as the grant application process, so people are informed up front, and there's complete transparency as far as the scoring is concerned. And I believe that the scoring should be part of the NAC and where the priorities are according to the commission. And so that's part of the process that we definitely like to see as far as when the request for grants is put out there, that the scoring sheets are part of that request so people know what they're looking at and what they're going to be judged on. And then again, if we're going to be using a technical advisory committee, that those scoring sheets are open and available through the process so that people understand how their grants were scored so they can adjust accordingly and that the priorities of the OHB commission are being met. So that was an overall observation that I think is encompassed in NAC 490, 1385, and 1393 that's in, addressed in our on our written comments also.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. So in the past, or definitely last year, we provided the scoring sheets with the grant application so that after the commission voted, you know, which of the nine possible ways to use the funds, which should be ranked heaviest and which should be ranked least heavy. All of that is provided, but this change, the proposed change that if this NAC goes through, would be that the technical advisory committee who will pick, they'll do all of the scoring and then provide a scored list of grants to the OHB commission to provide the funding.
And that was my concern because I really appreciated the process I saw last year. I thought it was open and transparent and really good for the public if they wanted to participate. And that's where my concern was with the technical advisory committee and where how that scoring is going to be accomplished and where the accountability is.
And also, though, that the commissioners have the ability to final authority on what gets funded with reasons that are stated publicly. So if they deviate from the technical advisory committee, they know why. And but I sure get you how it was done before, because the first round I was involved, they threw the score sheet out. And they just said, we're going to do what we're going to do.
and I totally respect that. I just don't want it to be handed off bureaucratically, and then we get the priority list or the rank list from the advisory committee without an understanding of what happened behind the scenes. And so, I really appreciated last year the dialogue and the process that was used by the commission, and felt it was very involved and open.
Paul, so that is a good idea. But you also mentioned one point, like where's the accountability, right? So the intent here is that the commission will continue to say, hey, this is what we want to prioritize this year. Let's say it's trail maintenance activities. It's weighted the highest or the heaviest. We'll take that scoring sheet and provide it to this technical advisory committee. So when these guys are meeting saying, yes, this is a strong grant application, or these are the challenges we see with grant application A, B, or C, along with the advisory notes, we can also provide a list of, like, okay, based on the commission's scoring criteria, this is, application one, scores the highest, application 2 and 3. Then if the commission decides to fund application number 2, that's ranked number 2, but doesn't decide to fund application number 1, we have to provide the public with a reason of why did the advisory committee rank it so high, and then why was it not funded. I guess that's the intent, and does it look like we are writing this differently?
I understand the intent, and I understand the buck would stop with the commission. What my suggestion is, or Sora's suggestion is that the scoring sheets initially be part of the NAC because of the process in adopting the NAC, so there can be that public input into where the priorities of the commission are. And then they be made part of the NAC and part of the grant application process, so that if there are reprioritizations of where the commission wants to go, whether it be adding search and rescue, which would require NRS adjustment also, those could be incorporated within the scoring sheets through the NAC that would not require legislative action after some of the larger priorities could be addressed. And search and rescue has come up this last year, so I mentioned that. But I do like that incorporation of the scoring sheet from beginning to end, so people have a reference point to work on of where the commission is coming from.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's starting to get clear. And just for reference, we've been uploading, like, all the scoring sheets, all of the handwritten notes, all of those are uploaded to that December awards meeting file. So we're trying to just provide all of these documents to the public. You know, it's just really raw data.
Yeah, and like I said, I certainly appreciate that, and that's part of our goal in getting the user groups involved and helping them apply as end user groups that may not be particularly sophisticated or want to actually deal with it. Let me rephrase that, deal with the bureaucratic stuff of helping them through that process and doing those links to show them how transparent the commission has been and where their priorities are and why they should be applying for grants to take ownership of their trails. And so we just want to work hand in hand with the commission on making that happen and make sure that remains transparent is our primary point.
Okay. Any other specific NAC changes that draw any concern or comment?
Sorry to take all the time on this. This is Paul Quaid from SORA again. One other aspect that I saw, and I think this goes to some of the concerns about bandwidth, as it were, or time, related to NAC 4901466 as far as ongoing monitoring of projects as we start to string these things out to make sure that these projects are still being maintained, down the road. There's a suggestion within that NAC 1466 that we look at self-monitoring, and I think this is probably a personnel issue of what's the reality of us being able to go back, or the commission or the program being able to go back and look and make sure that this grant money is being used effectively 5-10 years down the road. I think we need to take a real close look at that and how we're going to make that happen. And going to Commissioner Baker's points about having some in-house staff versus maybe a private public collaboration, that we need to look at, because Nikhil's only one man trying to take care of a lot of projects, and him being able to go back and look at projects 5 years ago, there needs to be some thought and consideration of how we're going to make that look. And even in monitoring, as the grant pot grows and we look at more and more projects, how we're going to monitor it and make sure there's compliance moving forward. Just a generalized comment as far as how we're going to look at that monitoring process.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I'm also concerned about it. You can see, like, for NEC 490.1465, we removed that annual report for a period of 20 years, and we thought that, I guess, a little bit of background, the five-year cycle, I proposed just 5 years monitoring so that as the list of OHV commissioners changes, they'll have a better idea of where the commission's funds were invested 5 years prior. So as the number or the commissioners that are sitting change, they'll kind of be reminded what happened 5 years before their tenure.
Yeah, and I think having that historical knowledge and reports that are prepared is so important as we do rotate through commissioners, and we have a track record of the different groups that have applied for grants, what their success rate was, is this something that, is this a group or a type of project that we want to support moving forward? I think that institutional history needs to be documented and carried forward for commissioners.
Okay. Yeah, so any idea of how to streamline that five-year reporting or how we can set up like a database to track it? right now it's kind of an Excel spreadsheet and a whole lot of different folders on our server here. So I'm looking just forward. You know, right now we're pushing, you know, 40 projects since this whole program started. We added another 18 this year, so it's going to kind of steamroll pretty quickly here.
And we may eventually have to have a person that's on. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have comments on the changes that are proposed here? Okay. Did anybody want to bring up additional changes, not in the language that we've presented, but on NAC 490 that we are not planning to touch? Does anybody have comments on that?
I think legislatively, that's quite a bit to get through in one session, practically.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, if there's another good idea, it doesn't hurt to bring it up. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, if there's no further public comments, I'll give a quick overview of what we discussed here. A lot of these changes will require NRS change, so I'm going to try and just review these meeting notes or review this meeting recording and type up notes accordingly. But number one, there are some concerns on getting the electronic submissions up and running. There's these three items: being sure to capture taxation either during the titling process or registration process, something to look at. There's a concern with submitting VIN inspections online due to fraud. And then to piggyback off that, we need to figure out how those VIN inspections can be used by law enforcement to track down stolen machines to better police for those items. We need to figure out financing for electronic submissions, and then we went through kind of a laundry list of items that will require any NRS changes, including reciprocity and registration on an annual basis versus a use sticker with some of the other states. Anything else, any other topics we want to enter into public record? Otherwise, my plan here is to go through this meeting recording, type up notes, incorporate changes, and then reach out probably to representatives of DMV to run another draft past them, and then Paul or anybody from SORA, really, we can maybe get together and incorporate some of the changes.
Mr. Baker, Fell. I guess I was thinking that our discussion on the VIN resulted in everybody agreeing to just do away with the VIN altogether and just have this user sticker as the ultimate goal.
It kind of ended up that way, yes.
Commissioner Parks, I think the idea is to still title the vehicle using the VIN and make that a one-time deal. Just the only time you would change your title or update it is if you sold the machine. So you would still do that event. You would still have to go through that process on a new purchase or a purchase of a used one through a private party maybe, but not to re-register or not for the use every year, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, that sounds accurate. Commissioner Baker, I'll need to, just double-check or look into if we can change registration to use sticker through NACs. I'm not 100% sure there. Okay. Anything else?
Yes, this is Commissioner Fell. Is this the time to look at adding search and rescue to possible grantees, or because that would be another NRS change?
It would.
Yeah. Thanks, Commissioner Fell.
Bringing that up, Phil.
Yeah, might as well enter it. We can't. It'll require NRS changes because that would need to be added to those, 9 eligible grant items?
Yes, it would. And I think it's important. I think it's just a simple oversight in the past, but we need to correct that.
Okay.
Anything else? So we'll type up some notes and make some changes and
consult
with a few. We'll be talking about it in public in less than a month also.
So less than a month.
27 days, to be exact.
This morning we set the next OHV commission date, and if it's working for everybody online here, we'll hold the workshop right after the next commission meeting, held on June 10th. Likely commission meeting starting at 9 in the morning, and then the NAC workshop to follow at 1 o'clock. Okay.
Public comment?
A time for public comments. We'll open up the floor if there's any new public comments. Okay. And item number 4 is adjourning this workshop on amendments to NAC 490. So, this public meeting is closed.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great idea. Much better shape.
Your conference is ending now. As requested by the host, please hang up.